on him. What data card? Gillespie scoffed. We haven't found any data card.
Yes, we have, Elor said softly.
Card looked at him. Elor's flat face was stiff, his emotions unreadable as he silently handed his datapad to Mazik. The other took it, and his face, too, hardened.
So there it is,
he said softly, laying the datapad on the table.
Well, I suppose there's nothing else to say.
Wait a second, Gillespie objected. There is, too. Card's right about that intruder. I was with him upstairs when the alert came through. Mazik shrugged.
Fine. I'll play. What about it, Card? What did you see?
Card shook his head, trying to keep his eyes off the muzzle of Mazik's blaster.
Nothing, unfortunately. Jin thought he saw some movement near the ship, but we weren't able to locate anyone.
I didn't notice all that many places out there where anyone could hide,
Mazik pointed out.
A human couldn't, no, Card agreed. On the other hand, it didn't occur to us at the time just how many shadows there were along the walls and near the doors.
Meaning you think it was my wraith, huh?
Ferrier put in.
That's typical, Card. Fire off a few hints and try to fog the issue. Well, forget it. It won't work.
Card frowned at him, at the aggressive face but wary eyes, and suddenly he realized he'd been wrong about the setup here. Ferrier and Mazik were not, in fact, working together on this. It was Ferrier alone, probably under Thrawn's direction, who was trying to bring him down. Which meant Mazik honestly thought Card had betrayed them all. Which meant, in turn, that there might still be a chance to persuade him otherwise.
Let me try this, then, he said, shifting his attention back to Mazik. Would I really be so careless as to leave a record of my treachery here, where anyone could find it?
You didn't know we'd be looking for it,
Ferrier said before Mazik could answer. Card cocked an eyebrow at him.
Oh, so now it's we, Ferrier? You're assisting Mazik on this?
He's right, Card. Stop trying to fog the issue, Mazik said. You think Thrawn would go to all this effort just to take you down? He could have done that straight out of Trogon.
He couldn't touch me at Trogon, Card shook his head. Not with all of you there watching. He would have risked stirring up the entire fringe against him. No, this way is much better. He destroys me, discredits my warnings about him, and retains both your goodwill and your services.
Klingon shook his shaggy head.
No! Thrawn is not like Vader. He would not waste troops in a deliberately failed attack.
I agree, Card said. I don't think he ordered the Trogon attack, either. I think someone else planned that raid, and that Thrawn's simply making the best use of it he can.
I suppose you're going to try and put that one on me, too,
Ferrier growled.
I haven't accused anyone, Ferrier, Card reminded him mildly. One might think you had a guilty conscience.
There he goes, fogging things again,
Ferrier said, looking around the table before turning his glare back to Card.
You already practically flat-out accused my wraith of planting that data card in here.
That was your suggestion, not mine, Card said, watching the other closely.
Thinking on his feet obviously wasn't Ferrier's strong point, and the strains were starting to show. If he could push just a little harder.
But since we're on the subject, where is your defo?
He's on my ship,
Ferrier said promptly.
Over in the western courtyard with everyone else's. He's been there since I landed.
Why?
Ferrier frowned.
What do you mean, why? He's there because he's part of my crew.
No, I mean, why isn't he outside the wild card with the rest of the bodyguards?
Who said he was a bodyguard?
Card shrugged.
I simply assumed he was. He was playing that role on Trogon, after all.
That's right, he was,
Gillespie said slowly.
Standing over against the wall. where he was all ready to hit the Imperials when they came in.
Almost as if he knew they were coming, Card agreed. Ferrier's face darkened.
Card?
Enough! Mazik cut him off. This isn't evidence, Card, and you know it. Anyway, what would Ferrier have to gain by setting up an attack like that?
Perhaps so he could be conspicuous in helping us fight it off, Card suggested, hoping it would soothe our suspicions about his relationship with the Empire.
Twist all the words you want,
Ferrier said, jabbing a finger at the data pad sitting on the table beside Mazik.
But that data card doesn't say I hired Kosk and his squad. It says you did. Personally, I think we've heard enough of this.
Just a minute,
Mazik interrupted, turning to face him.
How do you know what the data card says?
You told us,
Ferrier said.
You said it was the other half of the...
I never mentioned the lieutenant's name.
The room was suddenly very quiet, and behind his beard, Ferrier's face had gone pale.
You must have.
No,
Mazik said coldly.
I didn't.
No one said it,
Klingon rumbled. Ferrier glared at him.
This is insane,
he spat, some of his courage starting to come back.
All the evidence points straight to Card, and you're gonna let him off just because I happen to hear this Kosk's name somewhere? Maybe one of the stormtroopers on Trogon shouted it during the fight. How should I know?
Well then, here's an easier question, Card said. Tell us how you learned the time and location of this meeting, given your lack of an invitation. Mazik shot a look at him.
You didn't invite him?
Card shook his head. I've never really trusted him. Not since I heard about his role in Thrawn's acquisition of the Katana fleet. He wouldn't have been a Trogon at all if Gillespie hadn't made the invitation more or less open to anyone.
Well, Ferrier,
Dravis prompted.
Or are you gonna claim one of us told you?
There were tight lines at the corners of Ferrier's eyes.
I picked up the transmission to Mazik,
he muttered.
Decrypted it. Figure I ought to be here.
Pretty fast decrypting work, Gillespie commented. Those were good encrypt codes we were using. You kept a copy of the original encrypted transmission, of course.
Ferrier stood up.
I don't have to sit here and listen to this,
he growled.
Card's the one on trial here, not me.
Sit down, Ferrier,
Mazik said softly. His blaster was no longer pointed at Card.
But he's the one,
Ferrier insisted. His right hand shot out, forefinger pointed accusingly at Card.
He's the one who...
Watch out! Gillespie snapped, but it was too late. With his right hand waving out in front of him as a diversion, Ferrier's left hand had dipped into his waist sash and was now back out in front of him, holding a thermal detonator.
All right. Hands on the table,
he snarled.
Drop it, Mazik.
Slowly, Mazik laid his blaster on the table.
You can't possibly get out of here, Ferrier, he bit out. It'll be a toss-up between Shada and my enforcers.
They'll never even get a shot at me,
Ferrier said, reaching over to pick up Mazik's blaster.
Wraith, get in here.
Behind him, the wardroom door slid open, and a black shadow moved silently into the room. A black shadow with red eyes and a hint of long white fangs. Klingon swore, a roiling Zehethbra curse.
So, Card was right about all of it. You have betrayed us to the Empire.
Ferrier ignored him.
Watch them,
he ordered, shoving Mazik's blaster at the shadow and drawing his own.
Come on, Card. We're going to the bridge.
Card didn't move.
If I refuse,
I kill you all and take the ship up myself,
Ferrier told him shortly.
Maybe I should do that anyway. Thrawn'd probably pay a good bounty on all of you.
I concede the point, Card said, getting to his feet.
This way.
They reached the bridge without incident.
You're flying,
Ferrier instructed, gesturing toward the helm with his blaster as he took a quick look at the displays.
Good. I figured you'd have it ready to go.
Where are we going? Card asked, sitting down in the helm seat. Through the viewport, he could see some of his people, oblivious to his presence up here, as they maintained their uneasy standoff with Mazik's enforcers.
Out, up, and over,
Ferrier told him, motioning toward the broken fortress wall ahead with his blaster.
We'll start with that.
I see, Card said, keying for a pre-flight status report with his right hand, and letting his left drop casually to his knee. Just above it, built into the underside of the main console, was a knee panel with the controls for the ship's external lights. What happens then?
What do you think?
Ferrier retorted, crossing over to the comm station and giving it a quick look.
We get out of here. You got any other ships on comm standby?
The Starry Ice and Aetherway,
Card said, turning the exterior running lights on and then off three times. Outside the viewport, frowning faces began turning to look up at him.
I trust you're not going to try to go very far.
Ferrier grinned at him.
What? You afraid I'll steal your precious freighter?
You're not going to steal it, Card said, locking eyes with him. I'll destroy it first.
Ferrier snorted.
Big talk from someone on the wrong end of a blaster,
he said contemptuously, hefting the weapon for emphasis.
I'm not bluffing,
Card warned him, turning on the running lights again and risking a casual look out the viewport. Between the warning flicker of lights and the sight of Ferrier holding a blaster on him, the crowd out there had presumably caught on to what was happening. He hoped so, anyway. If they hadn't, the Wild Card's unannounced departure would probably trigger a firefight.
Sure you're not,
Ferrier grunted, dropping into the co-pilot station beside him.
Relax. You're not going to have to be a hero. I'd like nothing better than to take the Wild Card off your hands, but I know better than to try to run a ship like this with half a crew. No, all you're going to do is take me back to my ship. We'll get out of here and lay low until all this blows over.
He threw one last look at the displays and nodded.
Okay, let's go.
Mentally crossing his fingers, Card eased in the repulsor lifts and nudged the ship forward, half expecting a barrage of blaster shots from the crowd of aides and bodyguards outside. But no one opened fire as he maneuvered carefully through the jagged stone edging of the opening and out into the open air.
Yeah, they're all gone from in there, all right,
Ferrier said casually into the silence.
Probably scrambling to get back to their ship so they can chase after us.
You don't seem worried about it.
I'm not,
Ferrier said.
All you have to do is get me to my ship a little ahead of them. You can do that, right?
Card looked over at the blaster pointed at him.
I'll do my best.
They made it easily. Even as the Wild Card settled to the cracked stone beside a modified Corellian gunship, the others were just beginning to appear from the archways leading into the main part of the fortress, a good couple of minutes away.
Knew you could do it,
Ferrier complimented him sarcastically, standing up and keying the intercom.
Wraith, hit the door. We're out of here.
There was no response.
Wraith, you hear me?
She will not be hearing anything for a while,
Klingon's voice rumbled back.
If you want him, you will have to carry him.
Viciously, Ferrier slapped off the intercom.
Fool! I should have known better than to trust a stupid wraith with anything. Better yet, I should have killed all of you right at the start.
Perhaps, Card said. He nodded across the courtyard toward the approaching bodyguards and enforcers.
I don't think you have the time to correct that oversight now.
I'll just have to do it later,
Ferrier shot back.
I could still take care of you, though.
Only if you're willing to die along with me,
Card countered, shifting slightly in his seat to show that his left hand was holding down one of the knee panel switches.
As I said, I'd rather destroy this ship than let you have it.
For a long moment, he thought Ferrier was going to try it anyway. Then, with obvious reluctance,
The ship thief shifted his arm and sent two shots sizzling into the fire control section of the control board.
Another time, Card,
he said. He stepped back to the bridge door, threw a quick look outside as it opened, and then slipped through.
Card took a deep breath, exhaled it slowly. Releasing the landing light switch he'd been holding down, he stood up.
15 seconds later, he spotted Ferrier through the viewport as he sprinted alone toward his gunship. Reaching carefully past the sizzling hole in his control board, he keyed the intercom.
This is Card, he said. You can unbarricade the door now. Ferrier's left. Do you need any medical help or assistance with your prisoner?
No to both,
Gillespie assured him.
Defil might be good at sneaking around, but they're not much good as jailers. So Ferrier just abandoned him here, huh?
No more or less than I would have expected from him,
Card said. Outside the viewport, Ferrier's gunship was rising on its repulsor lifts, rotating toward the west as it did so.
He's lifting now. Warn everyone not to leave the ship. He's bound to have something planned to discourage pursuit.
And he did. The words were barely out of Card's mouth when the hovering ship ejected a large canister into the air overhead. There was a flash of light, and suddenly the sky exploded into a violently expanding tangle of metal mesh. The net stretched itself out across the courtyard and settled to the ground, throwing off sparks where it draped itself across the parked ships.
A Connor net,
Dravis's voice came from behind him.
Typical ship thief trick.
Card turned. Dravis, Partaw, and Mazik were standing just inside the door, looking through the viewport at the departing gunship.
We have plenty of people outside it, he reminded them. It shouldn't take long to get it burned off.
He must not be allowed to escape,
Partaw insisted, making a Hodin gesture of contempt toward the gunship.
He won't, Card assured her.
The gunship was streaking low across the plain, staying out of range of anything the netted ships might still be able to fire at him.
The Aetherway and Starry Ice are standing ready, north and south of here.
He turned back and lifted an eyebrow toward Mazik.
But under the circumstances, I think Mazik should have the honor.
Mazik gave him a tight smile.
Thank you,
he said softly, pulling out his comlink.
Griv, Amber, gunship on the way. Take it.
Card looked back. The gunship was nearly to the horizon now, starting its vertical climb toward space. And as he watched, Mazik's two fighters rose behind it from their hiding places and gave pursuit.
I guess I owe you an apology, Mazik said from behind him.
Card shook his head.
Forget it,
he said.
Or better, don't forget it. Keep it as a reminder of the way Grand Admiral Thrawn does business, and what people like us ultimately mean to him.
Don't worry,
Mazik said softly. I won't forget.
Good, Card said briskly. Well then, let's get our people out there busy on this net. I'm sure we'd all prefer to be off Hijarna before the Empire realizes their scheme has failed.
In the distance, just above the horizon, there was a brief flare of light.
And while we're waiting, Card added, I still have a proposal to present to you.
Chapter 19.
All right,
Han told Lando, his finger searching along the edge of R2's left leg for a better handhold.
Get ready.
The droid twittered something.
He reminds you to be careful,
3PO translated, standing nervously just far enough out of their way not to get yelled at.
Do you remember that the last time...
We didn't drop him on purpose,
Han growled.
If you'd rather wait for Luke, he's welcome.
R2 twittered again.
He says that will not be necessary. He trusts you implicitly.
Glad to hear it,
Han said. There were, unfortunately, no better handholds. He'd have to talk to Industrial Automaton about that someday.
Here we go. Lando, lift!
Together they strained.
And with a jolt that wrenched Han's back,
The droid came up and out of the tangle of tree roots that he'd somehow gotten entwined around his wheels.
There you go,
Lando grunted, as they dropped the droid more or less gently back into the dirt and leaves of the dry creek bed.
How's it feel?
The explanation this time was longer.
He says there appears to have been only minimal damage,
3PO said.
Mainly cosmetic in nature.
Translation, he's rusting,
Han muttered, rubbing the small of his back as he turned around. 5 meters further down the creek bed, Luke was using his lightsaber to carefully slice through a set of thick vines blocking their path. Beside him, Chewbacca and Mara were crouched with weapons drawn, ready to shoot the snake-like creatures that sometimes came boiling out when you cut into them. Like everything else on Wayland, they've learned about that one the hard way. Lando walked up beside him, brushing a few last bits of acidic tree root off his hands.
Fun place, isn't it? He commented.
I should have brought the Falcon down closer,
Han grumbled.
Or moved it closer when we found out we couldn't use the speeder bikes.
If you had, we might be dodging Imperial patrols right now instead of fighting acid root and vine snakes,
Lando said.
Personally, I'd call that a fair trade.
I suppose so,
Han agreed reluctantly. In the near distance, something gave out with a complicated whistle, and something else whistled back. He looked that direction, but between the brush and vines and 2 different levels of trees, he couldn't see anything.
Doesn't sound much like a predator, Lando said.
Maybe.
Han looked back over his shoulder to where 3PO was talking soothingly to R2 as he inspected the squat droid's latest acid burns.
Hey, short stuff. Get your scanners busy.
Obediently, R2 extended its little antenna and began moving it back and forth. For a minute, it clucked to itself, then jabbered something.
He says there are no large animals anywhere within 20 meters. Beyond that...
He can't read through the undergrowth,
Han finished for him. It was getting to be a very familiar conversation.
Thanks.
R2 retracted his sensor, and he and 3PO resumed their discussion.
Where do you suppose they've all gone?
Lando asked.
The predators?
Han shook his head.
Beats me. Maybe the same place the natives went.
Lando looked around, exhaling gently between his teeth.
I don't like it, Han. They've got to know by now that we're here. What are they waiting for?
Maybe Mara was wrong about him,
Han suggested doubtfully.
Maybe the Empire got tired of sharing the planet with anyone else and wiped them out.
That's a cheerful thought, Lando said. Still wouldn't explain why the Predators have ignored us for the past 2.5 days.
No,
Han agreed. But Lando was right. There was something out there watching them. He could feel it deep in his gut. Something or somebody.
Maybe the ones that got away after the first fight passed the word down the wire to leave us alone.
Lando snorted.
Those things were dumber than space slugs, and you know it.
Han shrugged.
Just a thought.
Ahead, the greenish glow vanished as Luke closed down his lightsaber.
Looks clear, he called softly back. You get R2 out?
Yeah, he's all right,
Han said, stepping up behind them.
Any snakes?
Not this time.
Luke pointed with his lightsaber at one of the trees bordering the creek bed.
Looks like we just missed having to tangle with another group of clawbirds, though.
Han looked. There in one of the lower branches was another of the plate-sized mud and grass nests. 3PO had brushed against one of them the day before, and Chewbacca was still nursing the slashes he'd gotten his left arm before they'd managed to shoot or lightsaber the predator birds that had come out of it.
Don't touch it, he warned.
It's okay. It's empty,
Luke assured him, nudging it with the tip of the lightsaber.
They must have moved on.
Yeah,
Han said slowly, taking a step closer to the nest.
Right.
Something wrong?
Han looked back at him.
No,
he said, trying hard to sound casual.
No problem. Why?
Behind Luke, Chewbacca rumbled deep in his throat.
Let's get moving,
Han added, before Luke could say anything.
I want to get a little further before it gets dark. Luke, you and Mara take the droids and head out. Chewie and me'll take the rear.
Luke wasn't going for it. He could tell that from the kid's face. But he just nodded. All right. Come on, 3PO. They started down the creek bed, 3PO complaining as usual the whole way. Lando threw Han a look of his own, but followed after them without comment. Beside him, Chewbacca growled a question.
We're gonna find out what happened to the clawbirds, that's what,
Han told him, looking back at the nest. It didn't look damaged, like it should have if a predator had got it.
You're the one who can smell fresh meat 10 paces upwind. Start sniffing.
It turned out not to take much in the way of Wookiee hunting skill. One of the birds was lying beside a bush just on the other side of the tree, its wings stretched out and stiff, very dead.
What do you think?
Han asked, as Chewbacca gingerly picked it up.
Some predator?
Chewbacca rumbled a negative. His climbing claws slid from their sheaths, probing at a dark brown stain on the feathers under the left wing. He found a cut, dug a single claw delicately into it, and growled.
You sure it was a knife?
Han frowned, peering at the wound.
Not some kind of claw?
The Wookiee rumbled again, pointing out the obvious. If the bird had been killed by a predator, there shouldn't have been anything left but feathers and bones.
Right,
Han commented sourly as Chewbacca dropped the clawbird back beside the bush.
So much for hoping the natives weren't around. Must be pretty close, too.
Chewbacca growled the obvious question.
Beats me, Han told him. Maybe they're still checking us out, or waiting for reinforcements.
The Wookiee rumbled, gesturing at the bird, and Han took another look. He was right. The way the wound was placed meant that the wings had been open when it had been killed, which meant it had been killed in flight, by a single stab.
You're right. They're not going to need any reinforcements,
he agreed.
Come on, let's catch up with the others.
Solo had wanted them to keep going until it got dark, but after another disagreement between Skywalker's astromech droid and a tangle of acid vines, he gave up and called a halt.
So what's the word?
Mara asked as Skywalker dropped his pack beside hers and stretched his shoulder muscles.
We going to have to carry it?
I don't think so, Skywalker said, looking over his shoulder to where Calrissian and the Wookiee had the R2 on its side and were tinkering with its wheels.
Chewie thinks he'll be able to fix it. You ought to trade it in on something that wasn't designed to travel on a flat metal deck. Sometimes I've wished,
Skywalker conceded, sitting down beside her.
All things considered, though, he does pretty well. You should have seen how far across the Tatooine Desert he got the first night I had him.
Mara looked past the droids to where Solo was setting up his bedroll and keeping one eye on the forest around them.
You going to tell me what Solo was talking to you about back there? Or is it something I'm not supposed to know?
He and Chewie found one of the clawbirds from that empty nest, Skywalker said. The one near the second vine cluster we had to cut through today. It had been killed by a knife thrust. Mara swallowed, thinking back to some of the stories she'd heard when she was here with the Emperor.
Probably the Minurshi,
she said.
They were supposed to have made an art of that kind of close-blade combat. Did they have any feelings one way or the other about the Empire? Like I told you before, they don't like humans,
Mara told him,
starting with the ones who came here as colonists long before the Emperor found the planet.
She looked at Skywalker, but he wasn't looking back. He was staring at nothing, a slight frown creasing his forehead. Mara took a deep breath, stretching out with the Force as hard as she could. The sounds and smells of the forest wove their way into her mind, flattening into the overall pattern of life around her. Trees, bushes, animals, and birds. And there, just at the edge of her consciousness, was another mind. Alien, unreadable, but a mind just the same.
4 of them,
Skywalker said quietly.
No, 5.
Mara frowned, concentrating on the sensation. He was right.
There was more than one mind out there. But she couldn't quite separate the various components out from the general sense.
Try looking for deviations, Skywalker murmured. The ways the minds are different from each other. That's the best way to resolve them.
Mara tried it, and to her slightly annoyed surprise, discovered that he was right. There was the second mind, the third, and then suddenly, they were gone. She looked sharply at Skywalker.
I don't know, he said slowly, still concentrating. There was a surge of emotion, and then they just turned and left.
Maybe they didn't know we were here,
Mara suggested hesitantly, knowing even as she said it how unlikely that was. Between the Wookiee roaring at everything that came at them, and the protocol droid whining about everything else, it was a wonder the whole planet didn't know they were there.
No, they knew, Skywalker said. In fact, I'm pretty sure they were coming directly toward us when they were... He shook his head. I want to say they were scared away, but that doesn't make any sense.
Mara looked at the double-leaf canopy overhead.
Could we have picked up an Imperial patrol?
No.
Skywalker was positive.
I'd know if there were any other humans nearby.
Bet that comes in handy,
Mara muttered.
It's just a matter of training.
She threw him a sideways look. There'd been something odd in his voice.
What's that supposed to mean?
He grimaced, a quick tightening of his mouth.
Nothing. Just, I was thinking about Leia's twins. Thinking about how I'm going to have to train them someday.
You worried about when to start?
He shook his head.
I'm worried about being able to do it at all.
She shrugged.
What's to do? You teach them how to hear minds and move objects and use lightsabers. You did that with your sister, didn't you?
Yes, he agreed. But that was when I thought that was all there was to it. It's really just the beginning. They're going to be strong in the Force. And with that strength comes responsibility. How do I teach them that? How do I teach them wisdom and compassion, and how not to abuse their power?
Mara studied his profile as he gazed out into the forest. This wasn't just word games. He was really serious about it. Definitely a side of the heroic, noble, infallible Jedi she hadn't seen before.
How does anyone teach anyone else that stuff?
She said.
Mostly by example, I suppose.
He thought about it, nodded reluctantly.
I suppose so. How much Jedi training did the Emperor give you?
You will kill Luke Skywalker.
Enough!
She said shortly, shaking the sound of the words from her mind and trying to stifle the flash of reflexive hatred that came with them.
All the basics? Why? You're checking for wisdom and compassion?
No.
He hesitated.
But as long as we've got a few more days until we reach Mount Tantus, it might be a good idea to go over it again. You know, a refresher course sort of thing.
She looked at him, an icy chill running through her. He was just a little bit too casual about this.
Have you seen something about what's ahead of us?
She asked suspiciously.
Not really, he said,
but there was that brief hesitation again.
A few images and pictures that didn't make any sense. I just think it would be a good idea for you to be as strong in the Force as possible before we go in.
She looked away from him.
You will kill Luke Skywalker.
You'll be there,
she reminded him.
What do I need to be strong in the Force for?
For whatever purpose your destiny calls you to,
he said, his voice quiet but firm. We have an hour or so left before sundown. Let's get started. Wedge Antilles slid into his place on the long semicircular bench beside the other Starfighter Squadron commanders, glancing around the Star Cruiser war room as he did so. A good crowd already, and more were still filing in. Whatever Ackbar had planned, it was going to be big.
"'Lo, Wedge!'
Someone grunted in greeting as he sat down beside Wedge.
"'Fancy meeting you here.'
Wedge looked at him in mild surprise. Hash Kraken.
son of the legendary General Aaron Kraken, and one of the best starfighter commanders in the business.
I could say the same about you, Pash, he said. I thought you were out in Atrovis sector, babysitting the Outer Rim Comm Center.
You're behind the times, Pash said grimly. Janaris fell 3 days ago. Wedge stared at him.
I hadn't heard, he apologized. How bad was it?
Bad enough, Pash said. We lost the whole comm center, more or less intact, and most of the sector fleet supply depots. On the plus side, we didn't leave them any ships they could use, and we were able to make enough trouble on our way out to let General Creel sneak Travia Chan and her people out from under the Imperial's collective snout.
That's something, I guess, Wedge said. What was it got you? Numbers or tactics?
Both, Pash said with a grimace.
I don't think Thrawn was there personally, but he sure planned out the assault. I've got to tell you, Wedge, that those clones of his are the creepiest things I've ever tangled with. It's like going up against stormtroopers. Same rabid dedication, same cold-blooded machine precision fighting. The only difference is that they're everywhere now, instead of just handling shock troop duty. Tell me about it, Wedge agreed soberly. We had to fight off 2 TIE fighter squadrons of the things in the first Cat Kristak assault. They were pulling stunts I didn't think TIEs were capable of.
Pash nodded. General Krill figures Thrawn must be picking his best people for his cloning templates.
He'd be stupid to do anything else. What about Varth? Did he make it out?
I don't know, Pash said. We lost contact with him during the retreat. I'm still hoping he was able to punch through the other side of the pincer and hook up with one of the units at Fedji or Kataris.
Wedge thought about the handful of times he'd gone nose-to-nose with Wing Commander Varth over something, usually involving spare parts or maintenance time. The man was a bitter, caustic-mouthed tyrant, with the single redeeming talent of being able to throw his starfighters against ridiculous odds and then get them back out again.
He'll make it, Wedge said. He's too contrary to roll over and die just for the Empire's convenience.
Maybe.
Pash nodded toward the center of the room.
Looks like we're ready to start.
Wedge turned back as the buzz of conversation around them faded away. Admiral Ackbar was standing by the central holotable, flanked by General Crix Madine and Colonel Bren Derlin.
Officers of the New Republic!
Ackbar greeted them gravely, his large Mon Calamari eyes rotating to take in the entire room.
None of you needs to be reminded that in the past few weeks, our war against the remnants of the Empire has changed from what was once called a mopping-up exercise to a battle for our very survival. For the moment, the advantage of resources and personnel is still ours. But even as we speak, that advantage is in danger of slipping away. Less tangible, but no less serious, are the ways in which Grand Admiral Thrawn is seeking to undermine our resolve and morale. It is time for us to throw both aspects of this attack back into the Empire's face.
He looked at Madine.
General Madine?
I assume that you've all been briefed on the innovative form of siege the Imperials have created around Coruscant, Madine said, tapping his light pointer gently against his left palm. They've been making some progress in clearing out the cloaked asteroids, but what they really need to get the job done is a crystal grav field trap. We've been assigned to get them one.
Sounds like fun,
Pash muttered.
Quiet,
Wedge muttered back.
Intelligence has located 3 of them, Madine continued. All in Imperial-held space, naturally. The simplest one to go after is at Tan Green, helping to guard the new Ubiquitrate base they're putting together there. Lots of cargo and construction ships moving around, but relatively few combat ships. We've managed to insert some of our people into the cargo crews, and they report the place is ripe for the taking.
Sounds a lot like Endor,
someone commented from the bench across from Wedge.
How can we be sure it isn't a trap?
Actually, we're pretty sure it is, Madine said with a tight smile. That's why we're going here instead.
He touched a switch. The holo projector rose from the center of the table, and a schematic appeared in the air above it.
The Imperial Shipyard Zepil Bringi, he identified it. And I know what you're all saying to yourselves. It's big, it's well defended, and what in the galaxy is the High Command thinking about? The answer is simple. It's big, it's well defended, and it's the last place the Imperials will expect us to hit.
Moreover, if we succeed, we will have severely damaged their shipbuilding capability,
Akbar added.
As well as putting to rest the growing belief in Grand Admiral Thrawn's infallibility.
Which assumed, of course, that Thrawn was fallible. Wedge thought about pointing that out, decided against it. Everyone here was probably already thinking it anyway.
The operation will consist of two parts, Madine went on. We certainly don't want to disappoint the Imperials planning the trap for us at Tan Green. So Colonel Derlin will be in charge of creating the illusion that that system is indeed our target. While he does that, Admiral Akbar and I will be organizing the actual attack on Bil Bringi. Any questions?
There was a moment of silence. Then Pash raised his hand.
What happens if the Imperials pick up on the Bil Bringi attack and miss the Tangreen preparations entirely?
Madine smiled thinly.
We'd be most disappointed in them. All right, gentlemen. We have an assault force to organize. Let's get started.
The bedroom was dark and warm and quiet, murmuring with the faint nighttime noises of the Imperial City outside the windows and the more subtle sounds of the sleeping infants across the room. Listening to the sounds, inhaling the familiar aromas of home, Leia stared at the ceiling and wondered what had awakened her.
Do you require anything, Lady Vader?
A soft Nogri voice came from the shadows beside the door.
No, Movikar. Thank you,
Leia said. She hadn't made any noise. He must have picked up on the change in her breathing pattern.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to disturb you.
You did not,
the Nogri assured her.
Are you troubled?
I don't know,
she said. It was starting to come back now.
I had not a dream exactly, more like a subconscious flash of insight. A piece of a puzzle trying to fit into place.
Do you know which piece?
Leia shook her head.
I don't even know which puzzle.
Did it relate to the siege of stones in the sky above?
Mobikar asked.
Or with the mission of your consort and the son of Vader?
I'm not sure,
Leia said, frowning with concentration into the darkness and running through the short-term memory enhancement techniques Luke had taught her. Slowly, the half-remembered dream images started to sharpen.
It was something Luke said. No, it was something Morris said. Something Luke did. They fit together somehow. I don't know how, but I know it's important.
Then you will find the answer,
Mobikar said firmly.
You are the Lady Vader, the Malari Oosh of the Lord Vader. You will succeed at whatever goal you set for yourself.
Leia smiled in the darkness. It wasn't just words. Mobikar and the other Nogri truly believed that.
Thank you,
she said, taking a deep breath and feeling a renewing of her own spirit. Yes, she would succeed, if for no other reason than to justify the trust that the Nogri people had placed in her. Across the room, she could sense the restlessness and growing hunger that meant the twins would be waking up soon. Reaching past the lightsaber, half hidden beneath her pillow, she pulled her robe over to her. Whatever this important puzzle piece was she'd stumbled on, it would wait until morning.
Chapter 20.
The last surviving rebel ship flickered with pseudo-motion and vanished into hyperspace. And after a 30-hour battle, the heart of Kanshan Sector was finally theirs.
Secure the fleet from the full battle status, Captain,
Thrawn ordered, his voice grimly satisfied as he stood at the side viewport.
Deploy for planetary bombardment, and have Captain Harbid transmit our terms of surrender to the Jarfell government.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said, keying in the order. Thrawn half turned to face him.
And send a further message to all ships, he added. Well done.
Pelion smiled. Yes, the Grand Admiral did indeed know how to lead his men.
Yes, sir,
he said, and transmitted the message. On his board, a light went on. A pre-flagged message had just come through to Crypt. He pulled it up, skimmed through it.
A report from Tan Green?
Thrawn asked, still gazing out at the helpless world lying below them.
Yes, sir,
Pelion nodded.
The rebels have sent two more freighters into the system. Long-range scans suggest that they offloaded something in the outer system on the way in, but intelligence has so far been unable to locate or identify the drops.
Instruct them not to try, Thrawn said. We don't want our prey frightened off.
Pelion nodded, marveling once again at the Grand Admiral's ability to read his opponents. Up until 20 hours ago, he would have sworn the rebels wouldn't be audacious enough to commit this many forces to a battle just to get hold of a CGT array. Apparently they were.
We're also getting reports of rebel ships drifting quietly into the Tan Green area,
he added, skimming down the report again.
Warships, starfighters, support craft, the whole range.
Good,
Thrawn said. But there was something preoccupied and troubled about the way he clasped his hands behind his back. A message appeared on Pelion's board. The Jarfell government had accepted Harbid's terms.
Word from the Death's Head, Admiral,
he said.
Jarfell has surrendered.
Not unexpectedly, Thrawn said.
Inform Captain Harbid that he will handle the landings and troop deployments.
You, Captain, will reconfigure the fleet into defensive formation until planetary defenses have been secured.
Yes, sir.
Pelion frowned at the Grand Admiral's back.
Is anything wrong, Admiral?
I don't know, Thrawn said slowly. I'll be in my private command room, Captain. Join me there in 1 hour.
He turned and favored Pelion with a tight smile.
Perhaps by then I'll have an answer to that question.
Gillespie finished reading and handed the datapad across the table to Mazik.
You never cease to amaze me, Card,
he said, his voice just loud enough to be heard over the TapCap's background noise.
Where in space do you dig this stuff up from, anyway?
Around, Card said, waving his hand vaguely. Just around.
That doesn't tell me Minox spit, Gillespie complained.
I don't think it was meant to,
Mazik said dryly, handing the datapad back to Card.
I agree. It's very interesting. The question is whether we can believe it.
The information itself is reliable, Card said. My interpretation of it, of course, is certainly open to question.
Mazik shook his head.
I don't know. It seems like a pretty desperate move to me.
I wouldn't say desperate, Card disagreed.
Call it instead a return to the bold tactics the Rebel Alliance used to be known for. Personally, I think a move like this is long overdue. They've allowed themselves to be put on the defensive far longer than they should have.
That doesn't change the fact that if this doesn't work, they're going to lose a lot of ships,
Mazik pointed out.
Up to 2 entire sector fleets, if you can believe these numbers.
True, Card agreed. But if it does work, they get a major victory against Thrawn, and an equally major lift in morale. Not to mention a CGT array.
Yeah, that's another thing, Gillespie put in. What do they need a CGT for, anyway?
It supposedly has something to do with the reason Coruscant has been closed to civilian traffic for the past few days, Card said. And that's all I know.
Mazik leaned back in his seat and fixed Card with a speculative look.
Forget what they need it for. What are you proposing we do about it?
Card shrugged.
It looks to me like the New Republic is fairly desperate to get their hands on a CGT. If they're willing to fight for one, I assume they'd be even more willing to pay for one.
Seems reasonable,
Mazik agreed.
So what do you want us to do? Sneak into Tangreen before they get there?
Not really. Card shook his head. I thought that while everyone was busy fighting at Tangreen, we'd pick up the CGT at Bilbringi.
Mazik's smile vanished.
You're joking!
Not a bad idea, really, Gillespie put in, slowly swirling the remains of the drink in his cup. We slip in before the attack starts, then grab the CGT and run.
Through half the Imperial fleet? Mazik countered. Come on. I've seen the kind of firepower they keep there.
I doubt they'll have more than a skeleton defense there. Card raised an eyebrow. Unless you seriously think Thrawn won't anticipate and prepare for the New Republic's move on Tangreen.
Point. Mazik conceded. They can't afford to let the New Republic have a victory there, can they?
Particularly not at Tangreen. Card nodded. That's where General Bel Iblis successfully hit them once before.
Mazik grunted and pulled the data pad over in front of him again. Card let him reread the information and analysis, giving the Tapcalf a leisurely scan as he waited. Near the main entrance, Abes and Gillespie's Lieutenant Fawn were sitting together at one of the tables, doing a good job of looking inconspicuous. Across the way at the rear entrance, Mazik's bodyguard, Shada, was playing the flirtatious hostess role for Dankin and Torv, the whole routine being convincingly leered at by Rapoport and O'Shea, two more of Gillespie's people. Three more tables of backup forces were scattered elsewhere throughout the Tapcalf, primed and ready. This time, none of them were taking any chances with Imperial interference.
It won't be easy, Mazik warned at last. Thrawn was furious about that raid we pulled. They've probably redone their whole security setup by now.
All the better, Card said. They won't have found the holes in it yet. Are you in or out?
Mazik looked down at the data pad.
I might be in, he growled. But only if you can get a confirmation on the time of this Tangreen thing. I don't want Thrawn anywhere within 100 light years of Bilbringi when we hit the place.
That shouldn't be a problem, Card said. We know the systems where the New Republic is assembling their forces. I'll send some of my people to poke around and see what they can turn up.
What if they can't get anything?
Card smiled.
I need to have Ghent write us onto their payroll anyway, he pointed out. As long as he's in the system, he might as well check on their battle plans, too.
For a moment, Mazik just stared at him. Then, suddenly, the frown vanished, and he actually chuckled.
You know, Card, I've never seen anyone play both ends against the middle the way you do. Okay, I'm in.
Glad to have you, Card nodded. Gillespie.
I've already seen Thrawn's clones in action, Gillespie reminded him grimly. You bet I'm in. Besides, if we win, maybe I can get that land back the Empire stole from me on Yukio.
I'll put in a good word for you with the New Republic, Card promised. All right, then. I'm taking the wild card to Coruscant, but I'll be leaving Aves behind to coordinate my part of the attack group. He'll give you the operations plan when you check in.
Sounds good,
Mazik said, as they all got to their feet.
You know, Card, I just hope I'm around to see the day the New Republic catches up with you. Whether they give you a medal or just shoot you. Either way, it'll be a terrific show.
Card smiled at him.
I rather hope to be there that day myself, he said.
Good flight, gentlemen.
I'll see you at Bilbringi.
The brilliant green turbolaser blast flashed downward from the fuzzy-looking Star Destroyer in the distance beyond. It splashed slightly against the unseen energy shield, then reappeared a short distance away, continuing onward.
Stop, Admiral Drayson said.
The record froze. the hazy splash of turbolaser fire looking angular and rather artificial as it sat there in stop frame mode on the main display.
I apologize for the quality here, Drayson said, stepping over to tap it with his light pointer. Macro binocular records can be enhanced only so much before the algorithms start breaking down. But even so, I think you can all see what's happening. The Star Destroyer's blast is not, in fact, penetrating Yukio's planetary shield. What appears to be that same blast is actually a second shot, fired from a cloaked vessel inside the shield.
Lei appeared at the hazy picture. It didn't seem nearly that obvious to her.
Are you sure?
She asked.
Quite sure, Drayson said, touching his light pointer to the empty space between the splash and the continuing green fire. We have spectral and energy line data on the beams themselves, but this gap by itself is really all the proof we need. That's the bulk of the second ship, most likely a Carrick-class light cruiser from the size.
He lowered the light pointer and looked around the table.
In other words, the Empire's new superweapon is nothing more than an extremely clever fraud.
Leia thought about that meeting in Admiral Ackbar's rooms, back when he was under suspicion of treason.
Ackbar once warned Han and me that a Grand Admiral would find ways to use a cloaking shield against us.
I don't think you'd find anyone arguing that point, Drayson nodded. At any rate, they should put an end to this particular gambit. We'll put out an alert to all planetary forces that if the Empire tries it again, all they need to do is direct a saturation fire at the spot where the turbolaser blasts appear to penetrate the shield.
Fraud or not, it was still one highly impressive show,
Bill Iblis commented.
The position and timing were exquisitely handled. What do you think, Leia? That insane Jedi Luke locked horns with on Jomark?
I don't think there's any doubt,
Leia said, a shiver running through her.
We've already seen this kind of coordination between forces in Thrawn's earlier campaigns. And we know from Mara that Sabaoth and Thrawn are working together.
Mentioning Mara's name was a mistake. There was a general uncomfortable shifting in seats around the table as the emotional sense in the room chilled noticeably. They'd all heard Leia's reasoning for her unilateral decision to release Mara, and none of them had liked it. Bail Iblis broke the awkward silence first.
Where did this macrobinocular record come from, Admiral?
From that smuggler, Talon Card, Drayson said. He threw a significant look at Leia. Another outsider who came here offering valuable information that didn't pan out.
Leia bristled.
That's not fair, she insisted. The fact we lost the Katana fleet wasn't Card's fault.
She looked at Counselor Phalia, sitting silently at the table, doing his private Bothan penance. If Phalia hadn't been making that insane bid for power... She looked back at Drayson.
It was nobody's fault,
she added quietly, releasing at last the final lingering dregs of resentment at Phalia and allowing them to drain away. The recognition of his failure was already paralyzing the Bothan. She couldn't allow long-dead anger to do the same to her. Bail Iblis cleared his throat.
I think what Leia's trying to say is that without Card's help, we might have lost more than just the Katana fleet. Whatever you think of smugglers in general, or Card in particular, we owe him.
Interesting that you would say that, General, Drayson said dryly. Card seems to feel the same way. In exchange for this record and certain other minor items of intelligence, he's drawn rather liberally from a special New Republic credit line.
He looked at Leia again.
A line apparently set up by Counselor Organa Solo's brother.
Commander Sesfan, Ackbar's representative to the Council, rolled his huge Mon Calamari eyes toward Leia.
Jedi Skywalker authorized payments to a smuggler, he said, his gravelly voice sounding astonished.
He did, Drayson confirmed. Completely without authorization, of course. We'll close it off immediately.
You'll do no such thing.
Mon Mothma's quiet voice came from the head of the table.
Whether Card is officially on our side or not, he's clearly willing to help us. That makes him worthy of our support.
But he is a smuggler,
Sesfan objected.
So was Han,
Leia reminded him.
So was Lando Calrissian once. Both of them became generals.
After they joined us,
Sesfan countered.
Card has been...